There are various ways to approach the study of the Bible. The most popular way, and it's popular because it's good, I use it myself very often, is to take one text in the Bible and speak about that one text section by section. And up and down the world, ministers will say, my text for this morning is so-and-so, and they'll speak on that one text. You know, I refer to that way as the microscopic approach, where you take a microscope and you magnify that one text and look at it closely with your head right there, almost up against the text. That's one way. The other way of studying the Bible, and many, many ministers use this, and it's good to use it first, you know, in a mixture of both ways, is what we refer to as the telescopic way, where you're looking at something from a distance. It's as though I asked you the question, could you tell me something about the world? And I could talk for hours about Scotland or the people in France or the Atlantic Ocean and so on. And though I'm answering your question, telling you something about the world, it's not giving you a sort of big picture. But if I took you up in a spacecraft, or even an airplane, way up, and said, here is the world, here is the picture of the world, that's the globe now. Here's the continent of Africa, here's the continent of North America, here is Europe. And after giving you a wide, high, panoramic view of the world, I then slowly homed in on other truths like, say, this certain types of people live in this continent. You know, you've got dark people all over the world, but there's a concentration in this country of, in this continent of Africa. And this is an ocean. This is what we refer to as oceans. And we look at them from 100 miles up. And these are rivers and these are lakes and so on. These are mountain ranges. Now that's just giving you a panoramic view of the geographical structure of the earth. And then homing in onto some microscopic detail of, say, a worm or a tree on the earth. Is a better background picture. So now I'm taking Psalm 119, which is, as you know, how many verses? Psalm 119, 150 verses or something like that, right? 176 verses. Now I'm not picking one verse. It's like if we flew over an airplane over a forest and we said, there's a forest down there. Can you tell me about this forest? Now, I could home in, come right down into one tree and talk forever on that one tree, or one branch of that tree, or one bird on that branch, or one feather on that bird. But I'm just taking this panoramic, wide view, and I'm saying, in this forest, there are evergreen trees. There are lots of types of evergreen trees, but there are broad-leaf trees. There are bushes. There are ponds. There are creatures. There are birds, see? And I'll just broadly talk. So when I talk about the Psalms, I will be doing this sort of broad look at Psalm 119. I'm not homing in on any verse. To begin with, this is a Psalm of David. Right? Now, just to get a picture, this King David was a shepherd boy, the youngest of a big family. He had 7 brothers. And he was a good-looking fellow. He was very fit. Certain things about him, but it's not a talk on King David, but before we understand this psalm, we've got to see what sort of a person wrote it. And he wrote lots of psalms. Not all the psalms. Some of the psalms are written by other people, and a couple were even written by Moses. But anyway, he wrote the majority of the psalms in the book of Psalms. And this is his longest psalm. He's written some brilliant psalms, which are short. In fact, Psalm 23, the world's most popular psalm, practically. Been sung for thousands of years by people of all lands. It's a small psalm, just a few verses. But this is his longest psalm. He spent the most time on the psalm, so it's obviously something of great importance to this king. Now when we look at him and study him, we see that he had various qualities. In fact, when first person described him once, they said he's a ruddy complexion, he's fit, he's enthusiastic, he's a great musician. And then they said, and the Lord was with him. So his greatest quality, King David's greatest quality, is not his enormous bravery. Even as a lad, he, He was not scared that a lion had taken one of the kids from the flock. He would go after it and rip it to pieces. So he was extremely brave and extremely fit. Nothing frightened him. The whole army of Israel was shaking with fear at Goliath, but not King David. As a boy, a young man, he said, I'll kill this guy. But that was not his great quality. His quality was God was with him. And then I asked the question, why was God with this king? Or with this man? What makes him so special? And this psalm, in my opinion, gives the answer. King David, when God looked at him, and even the prophet Samuel, when he was went to pick the various sons, pick a king from the sons of Jesse, they saw the first one, said, this must be the king. He's coming. Look at him. He walks like a king. Tall, handsome, superb. Must be the king. And God said, don't look at him. Don't look at his height. Don't look at his stature and his bearing. I've rejected this guy. And then the next son came on, and Samuel thought, everybody's good. Superb. And then God said, man looks on the outward appearance, but God is looking on the heart. So whenever God was looking on a person, and he still does, he's not looking at his, we as human beings look at the outward appearance. We judge people, and fair enough, I do the same, so I'm not running anybody down. We judge them by what we see. The whole human race does that. If you're wanting to impress men, well, you've got to look good. But if you're wanting to impress God, not that he's going to be impressed if you walk about in rags and dirty clothes, no. But that's not the impressive. The impressive thing is your heart, because God puts that as parameter number one. The heart. That's what he looks at first. If you fall down there, he's not too concerned about how clean your shoes are and how well you stand and how you hold yourself and how tall you are and how beautiful you are. He's not concerned. If your heart is evil, you're rejected. And here we have King David was accepted because his heart was right. And we asked ourselves the question, why? What made him like that? How did he get to that stage where he's even called a friend of God like Abraham? Well, this song gives you a little pulse beat. It's as though you're taking a cardiograph and seeing this guy's heart in action. How does he work? You're looking right into the mind of this individual. Now, I'm not going to the statements in the psalm are numerous. They're coming out two or three a verse. A whole host of them. It's like looking at a forest. There's so many trees. You can't even concentrate on one tree. There's thousands of them. But I'm broadly splitting up the psalm into various categories. And the first category are certain statements he makes. I'm just calling this category statements. It's like saying, you see, I'm looking at Britain, mountain ranges. There's a huge mountain range there. There's another mountain range here. There's mountain ranges in this country. So there's statements. Here's a few. In verse 63, look at this statement. I am a companion of them that fear thee and of them that keep thy precepts. Now that's a statement. That's not a request, which is another category. That's not a vow, that's another category. That's not a question, which is another category. I'm going to come to that. This is a statement. Even my friends are those that keep thy commandments. In verse 72, you get another statement, right? Here it is. The law of thy mouth is better to me than a thousands of gold and silver. Bear in mind, this king was one of the richest kings that ever lived. His donation to the temple, which he gave to his son to set aside, was more than the wealth of whole nations. You wear the gold he gave. He just gave to build the temple. And he says, materials without number. The cost of materials nowadays, when you buy a small little house or build a house, the cost of materials, even a piece of wood, so expensive. King David gave tons of precious metals and wood and goods without number. And then he says, much more precious than all this
is thy law. Now that's a statement. That's giving you a right good look right into the heart of this guy. He's got his priorities right. And this is the secret of why God was with him. Because he had his priorities right. He valued not money, but God's law as much more important than all the gold and silver which he had. Which is valuable. I mean, money's important. Nobody knew more than him. Take another statement. Psalm 119 verse 97. He says, "Oh, how I love thy law. It is my meditation all day." What sort of a mind is this fellow got? He's thinking about it all day long. Why is he thinking about it? Isn't that sort of dry bone stuff you hear some preachers say, "Well, oh, you're up this again, you're all about the law. I can't even change the subject." What was King David finding that it was interesting his brain all day long? He's thinking about it. He makes some requests to God, which give you an insight that he has seen something in the law, which is not just a statement, do this, do this, do this, and don't do that. He's seen something. He's seen prophecies. He's seen God's plan. He's actually looking at the mind of God working in his law. That's amazing. Why are you doing that? Some character. What's the purpose of this particular command? What kind of a person is this who writes for all of that? When you go through the forest and you see a nest with three eggs, make sure you leave one for the mother bird. Who thinks of a thing like that? What sort of mind? In the laws of Britain, we don't have that. So King David, when he looks at the law, he doesn't just look at don't do this and don't do that and you must do this and you must do that. He's looking deeper. He says, "I am meditating on your law all the day." Now that's a statement. It's not a question. That's a statement. In verse 97, he says, "I love thy law." First part of that verse. I love it. The way some people talk, you think they hate it. They do hate it. It's a yoke of bondage. They hate it. It's a nuisance. In verse 104, another statement. "Through thy precepts I get understanding." In other words, by looking at your law and examining the principles involved, I can understand other problems because I can see here certain ways you're working, certain principles at play. And I can apply them when I'm king. I can see that principle there. I get understanding. And there's lots of statements like that. The next 105, "Thy word is a lamp to my feet, it's like a light to my path." Okay, that's statements. That's broad look at the statements. There's hundreds of them, or there's dozens of them. But let's go on to the next one. The questions. Right? We're looking at not just the trees, but we're looking at, say, the lakes. The questions. I've only picked out one question, but there's lots. Look at verse 9 here. This question. "Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way?" In other words, how can a young person be clean and pure? How do we do? How can we stay clean in this world? And his answer comes out, "By taking heed according to thy word." So that's a question and answer right there. There's several questions. He's asking questions and the answer is given. Quite different from a categoric statement. So when you read Psalm 119, you see lots of questions and lots of answers. So you learn how to live. You learn how to analyze. You learn wisdom. Because when you're looking at God's law, you're not just looking at a "thou shalt not do this" and "thou shalt not do that." And so why not? What's wrong with it? Why did you give that command? How is it going to influence me in the world? What's the purpose behind it? Learn. And this question and answer was, how shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed. Then he makes certain requests. Now a request is quite different from a question. Right? I'm wanting you to do something. I'm not just wanting you to answer a question. I'm wanting you to do something. And I've got three requests, or several requests. Verse 12. "Teach me thy statutes."
the end of verse 12. Teach me thy statutes. This request appears over and over and over again throughout this psalm. Look at verse 33. Teach me, O Lord, the way of thy precepts. Look at verse 64. I haven't noted all these verses, mind you, because there's too many. O Lord, the earth, O Lord, is full of thy mercy. Teach me thy statutes. Look at verse 108. Accept, I beseech thee, the freewill offering of my mouth, O Lord, and teach me thy judgments. So he says, teach me thy law, teach me thy statutes, teach me thy commandments, and teach me thy judgments. He's just not sort of willy-nilly throwing these out. He's not wanting to learn that. Teach me that. Teach me that section. Teach me that section. Teach me that section. All spread out through this whole psalm. So he's made a request to God. Teach me. Alright? Another request in verse 27, and these three requests more or less are the same. Verse 27, make me to understand the way of thy precepts. In other words, you might be teaching me and giving me the facts or the answers, but make me understand. In other words, put me in a situation that I just can't help but learn the lesson that you're trying to get across to me. Make me understand. My experience if necessary. Now that gives you some insight that the mind this person has, King David. He says, I don't only love your law, and I think it's more valuable than that gold, but I want to learn it. And there's times that I can't learn it because I'm too stupid. Make me understand it. In other words, I'm giving you free will to make me understand. A great mentality this man has. Make me to understand. Look at verse 35. Make me to go in the path of thy commandments. For therein do I dwell. In other words, if I'm wanting to go off somewhere, like a car wanting to go off the road because there's a camber making it all or slipping or something, push me into the right way. I'm giving you permission to do that. That's a great mind, isn't it? God will not force anybody to do anything, even if it's the right thing, without their permission. But if you give God permission to do that, and say, I'm giving you permission to make me do it, because I know it's right, it's some of the strength or the will or whatever, make me do it, then he'll do it. And King David gave that authority to God. He allowed him to do so. In verse 18, he talks about his eyes, which is more or less the same thing said in different ways. Open thou my eyes that I may behold wondrous things out of thy law. Now that's a very difficult sort of thing, you know, to come to a person and open their eyes. It's like opening their ears, you know. It's something you do for yourself if you want to hear or want to see. You don't go around, you can lift people up, you can even carry them around, but you seldom go around and open their eyes so that they can see. King David says, open my eyes so that I see wondrous things out of thy law. And he loves God's law. He knows it's the secret of wisdom. But still there are times when he wants to shut his eyes to them. What he didn't want to see or what he knows is good. So he says, make me see. it's an incredible insight to this person. And that's why I think he's called a man after God's own heart, because he has this mentality. And it's an attitude of mind he's got, that God loves. He's not a perfect person. King David wasn't perfect. He committed sins. But he had the right attitude and the right mind. And this psalm gives us an insight. It's a cardiograph of the way his heart beats. Okay. Open thou my eyes. It's the same thing, verse 37. Look at this. Here's another verse. Turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity. And in other words, I'm looking at things which are just vain and stupid. Force me to look somewhere else. Turn away my eyes. Right? That's another verse. Verse 66. Teach me good judgment and knowledge. Which is another way of saying the same thing. Verse 125.
I am thy servant. Give me understanding, and I will know thy testimonies. All right. In verse 17, one of the best verses in the psalm, I like it. I have sworn, deal bountifully with thy servant, that I may live and keep thy word. The next section is vows. So I've spoken on statements, and there are many, dozens, scores. I've spoken on requests. He makes requests of God. Questions and answers, and then vows. Verse 106, there's several vows, but I'll just take one. I have sworn, and I will perform it, that I will keep thy righteous judgment. Isn't that wonderful? I have sworn, and I will perform it, that I will keep thy righteous judgments. Right at the end of the psalm, he makes a plea, which could apply to almost any person at any age. There's so many verses, couldn't possibly deal with all these sections. But he says this, I have gone astray, like a lost sheep. Seek thy servant, for I do not forget thy commandments. And that's how the psalm ends. In other words, no matter what condition, the psalm doesn't end on a superb high where he's an absolute perfect person. He's still aware that he's got a long way to go. And he says, I'm like a sheep and I go astray. Search me out, because I never can forget your commandments. I can't forget them. They're branded on my brain. Whether I keep them or not, I can never forget them. So I recommend to you one of the greatest chapters, the longest chapter in the Bible, in the heart of the Bible. If you open your Bible in the middle, you'll come to the Psalms. The longest psalm. It's the longest psalm, written alphabetically, by the way. The first section was Alpha, and that, you know, in the original A, B, C, then you start each section with a... But I haven't taken it that way. There are many ways to study this psalm. And to look at 176 verses is virtually looking at this with an aerial view, looking at Earth from a satellite or a spaceship. And we've just broadly covered a few points. But the reason why I've covered these points is to point out the greatness of this man, King David. And he's writing, actually Christ actually is, most of these verses are applying in a better way, in a bigger way to Christ. The mentality. So just to recap, here is a shepherd boy, youngest in the family, wasn't considered much. Even his own father didn't think if he's going to be a king amongst my family, it wouldn't be him. Let him look after sheep. But he was chosen. Why was he chosen? Because in one respect, he had the best what? Of all his brethren. He had the best heart. That's not this organ pulsating in your chest. He wasn't the worst looking or the best looking. I don't want the tallest or the shortest, I don't know. But as far as heart was concerned, he was way ahead of his brethren. And even the prophet Samuel, let me told, I'm not looking on his height and his appearance. Men look on that. I'm looking on his heart. And this man has got the best heart. All right. So we say, what kind of a heart did he have? What sort of a person was he? And this psalm gives us an insight to the heart of King David. It's called a man after God's own heart. He's not just a copy, but he's a person who's going after, who's wanting to know just how God, and if I may say so in this way, he wants to know how God's mind works. What prompts him? What motivates him? What sort of a mentality does God have? And King David was after that all the time, to understand God. And he knew the way to do it was to learn his law and to obey his law. And when he tried the commandments and looked at them, I've just broadly broken these commandments down into various, in this whole psalm, into various sections. Statements. He made a few statements. His first statement, which I quoted, not the first in the psalm, keep company with the obedient. He was careful who he chose as his friends. He was careful who he appointed as his counselors and his ministers in Jerusalem. Then he evaluated God's law. It was more valuable than what? All his gold and silver. The most valuable thing I have, he says, is the law of God. So how does priorities now? He loved God's law. He said, because it teaches me wisdom. Then he had some questions. Well, I just mentioned one question. How shall a young man cleanse his way? How do we keep ourselves pure, clean? What was his answer? By taking heed thereto according to your word. That's how you want to, if you want to cleanse your way, that's it. Listen to God's law. Do what God commands. He made a few questions, requests. Oh, I made lots of requests. I've just brought out a few because it's a short talk and it's a big psalm. And one of the requests was, teach me thy statutes, commandments, precepts. Teach me. Open my eyes. Turn me around. Search me out. Make me keep your commandments. These are the requests King David made in the psalm. I present them to you. He made a vow. He made several vows. The vow I quoted in Psalm 119 verse 106. I have sworn. What if he swore? Swear. I have sworn. And I will perform it. That I will keep thy commandments or thy righteous judgments. I have sworn to do it. All of us here, young and older, and as we go through life, never forget that we, when we take a stand for God, we swear to follow God. It's like we take oaths when we get married. We take an oath to be faithful and true to our partners. And I will carry it out to be faithful to keep thy word or keep thy righteous judgments. And then if ever there's a time where you think you're sort of going astray, he makes this beautiful prayer, the last verse of his psalm 176. I've strayed like a lost sheep. Come. What is his next word? Can anyone remember? Seek or search for thy servant. Why? Why search for me? What's so special about you? Or him? And also sheep. Why search for him? Because I have not, you remember that? Because I have not forgotten thy commandments. I might have gone astray, but it's still in my mind. I can't forget it. So bring me back. That's the kind of person we all want to be. And if we allow that, then they could say God was with him. God will be with us if we have that attitude of mind. Amen.